Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Lewis Howes, the best-selling author of The School of Greatness and The Mask of Masculinity. Today, Lewis has over 500,000 followers on Instagram. He's the host of a top 100 iTunes podcast, The School of Greatness, that features interviews with people like Gary Vaynerchuk, Casey Neistat, Rob Dyrdek, Damon John, and hundreds more. Lewis has also got a blog with millions of readers. He's been on Good Morning America, The Today Show, Ellen, and I could keep going on and on. But things weren't always this way for Lewis. And in fact, a little over 10 years ago, he was completely broke and living on his sister's couch, not even able to afford rent. Originally from a small town in Ohio, Lewis got into sports in high school and pretty quickly excelled on the football field. He went on to play professional arena football, but an injury landed him out of the sport permanently. After taking some time to recover, get back on his feet, and begin figuring out what he wanted to do with his life now that football is out of the picture, Lewis turned back to his interest in sports marketing and began combining that with social media. Pretty soon, he launched his very first business as a LinkedIn consultant, and about the same time, began sharing publicly about his life and business over on his blog. And the rest, as they would say, is history. In this episode, Lewis and I talk about how he went from being broke, living on his sister's couch, to making his first $1 million a little over 2 years later by digging deep into his interests and applying the discipline he learned on the football field. We cover several of Lewis's big breaks, including how he got featured early on in his career in an article for a major publication alongside Gary Vaynerchuk, Tim Ferriss, and Seth Godin. We're digging into the various projects Lewis has worked on over the years, including his podcast, writing a best-selling book, building online revenue streams, and seriously, so much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Lewis Howes. Lewis, welcome to the show.
Thanks, my man. Appreciate it, Ryan.
So, Lewis, I've got to ask you the first question I've been asking everyone who's been on my show so far. What book are you reading right now, or what's been your favorite recently?
I'm going to start reading Terry Crews' book about manhood. You know, I just wrote a book about masculinity, and so I'm trying to dive into more about other people who are talking about this topic. And so I haven't actually opened it up yet, but it's on my desk, so that's going to be the one.
Awesome. And I've got plenty of questions for you later about the mask of masculinity. So for now, I want to go way back to the very beginning with you. So where are you originally from?
I'm a small town of Delaware, Ohio.
How many people live there?
I think growing up, it was like 25,000 or something. It's actually grown much bigger now, but it's still got this small town feel. And it's, you know, a very small little downtown like strip. And yeah. Old homes, buildings, and all that. It's about 30 miles from Columbus, so there's a big city near it.
I love that. Anywhere USA, right?
Exactly.
So what was it like growing up there? Did you stay there like through high school, you know, after that? Or when did you sort of part ways with
In Delaware? Eighth grade, my dad would send me and my siblings off to this kind of Christian camp growing up in the summers, right? And so we'd go for like a week or 2 weeks to this camp. It was in Missouri, in the middle of Missouri. And when I got to the end of seventh grade, I went to the summer camp, you know, the first couple weeks after school was out. And during the sixth and seventh grade, which was middle school for me, I started to hang out with kind of the wrong kids. I started to steal a lot, mostly like baseball cards and candy bars and stuff like that. But it started to get more and more in terms of stealing at stores. I think I just needed something to do, and I was really bored. And I wanted to get attention. So I was always stealing and just hanging out with the wrong group of kids. And I went to this camp that I'd gone to, you know, 5 or 6 years before that as well, every year, every summer. And I met these kids who were just very positive, you know, supportive, encouraging, kind, generous, compassionate, and just very thoughtful. And this whole 2 weeks I was there, I just really kind of felt this connection with this community of these kids. And a lot of them also went to this private boarding school in St. Louis, Missouri. That was also like a Christian school related to this camp or whatever. And I got off the plane back home from Missouri to Columbus after those 2 weeks. Both my parents picked me up. And within the first couple of minutes, I said, I want to go to this school. I want to go to this school that's in St. Louis, Missouri. And I want you guys to send me away. Usually it's the other way around where kids are bad and like parents want to send them away. I asked them to send me away. They said, absolutely not. You're staying here. You're not going anywhere. Every day that summer, I was just like, I'll do whatever it takes. And they were like, well, you got to apply first to see if you even get in, because it's like a challenging like private school. So I had to apply and write essays and all that stuff. And it's funny, when you want something bad enough, you're willing to do the things you don't like. You know, I hated writing papers and anything before, but now it's like excited about it. And then they're like, well, we'll see if you get in, but we don't even know if we can afford it. And so I said, okay, let's get in. Then they had to apply for financial aid to see if we could, you know, get some aid, because they couldn't pay for the whole thing. It was like 16 grand a year at the time. We got financial aid, and just each week I chipped away a little bit at them and enrolled them in sending me away until the last week. They're like, okay, we'll have you go to the school. And they drove me out when I was, again, in eighth grade. So it was a great experience. I was there from eighth grade until my senior year. I would come back home for Christmas break and summers and things like that, but that was really a transition in my life that shaped me, this experience. You know, it was, you had to wake up at 6 a.m., make your room, make your bed, dress code, you know, 2.5 hours of study hall at night. It was strict, but it was also just a great experience of love and community and support. So that was a big part of my life as well.
I love that. And I know this is kind of when, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but this is kind of when sports also became sort of a key part of your life. So, you know, you did football there. Is that where you went to college also?
I played football for the first time when I was a sophomore in high school there. And it was called Principia. And there was a college called Principia Well that it was connected to. I went to another college first, then transferred down to Principia, then transferred to another school, then came back. So I was kind of all over the place.
So what happens right after college? Did you immediately launch into a business? Was there some figuring it out time? What was kind of the next?
Right after college, I was, you know, going after the dream of playing professional football. So I was training at a facility in Houston, Texas for 8 weeks to get ready for the NFL combines and all those things, and tryouts with NFL teams. I was putting together like highlight DVDs from my career, and I took a sports marketing class in college, so I built like this whole branding package around me as an athlete. I was essentially my own agent, shipping them out to scouts and coaches and going to tryouts with my CDs and DVDs and passing them out. I was just hustling to get my name out there, kind of like pre-social media, you know. It was just like, what's the things you can do to build your online brand, but I was doing it offline. And I pursued that dream of playing football. I played arena football for the next year and a half, got injured. And then after that, I was trying to figure out, you know, who am I? What's my identity? This was my whole life. And now I don't have this anymore. What am I going to do? I was on my sister's couch recovering from a surgery. I broke my wrist, and it was about a year and a half recovering on her couch. The cast was on for 6 months. Then it was a rehab for a year. And during that time, I just was really kind of devastated because my identity was gone. My passion was gone. My father had also gotten a really bad car accident the year prior, and he was in a coma for 3 months. And even though he had woken up and was alive still, he didn't have the emotional capacity to really mentor and support the way he had, you know, growing up. So it was almost like my father wasn't around, even though he physically was. So I just kind of had to figure things out. I had to figure it out pretty quickly how to make money. I'd never made money before. I never really had a job. I was always working like little part-time things just to make enough. But my dad supported my training, and that was my job, to train for football. And I just knew early on that I needed to acquire some skills, because I didn't feel like I had any other skills in life besides being an athlete. You know, I could work hard. I could, work out hard, and I was coachable. I knew that if someone gave me some directions and something to execute, that I could go with the athlete mentality and take action until I figured it out. I just wanted that direction to start. So those first couple of years, I knew really quickly that I needed to gain skills to add value in the world. Otherwise, no one would hire me or I wouldn't be able to do something on my own. And that's when I started just reaching out to people and asking them questions like how they got to where they are. And people would tell me, you know, you should learn how to communicate, learn speaking, learn this. And so I learned marketing, learned branding, learned all these different things. So one of the people I met said, you need to join Toastmasters. He was like a professional speaker that spoke around the country getting paid full time. And I was like, this would be amazing, but I can't speak in front of five people right now. He said, join Toastmasters, go to it every single week for the year. And again, it was a, someone who had results that gave me a game plan to execute. I had one meeting with them.
They're qualified.
I had one meeting and I said, okay, I trust you. I'm going to find a Toastmasters club. The next week, I'd gone to five different clubs in Columbus to check them out, see what I liked, join one of them every single week for the next year. I went and I practiced the art of speaking and learning how to write speeches and getting up in front of a room and getting feedback and all that stuff. And so that was one thing that I did. And I just stuck to it for a year. Then I was salsa dancing every week. Then I was I had a mentorship with an inventor who was teaching me idea creation to branding, to product development, to marketing. I was on the phone as a publicist. I was going to trade shows. I was learning it all. From an idea to how do we manufacture, produce it, create it, develop it, sell it, everything. To writing a book. I wanted to write a book and I found a mentor who had written five books. And he kind of coached me on what to do and I just took action. And so these 2 years were really like a molding period for me to say, I need to learn some skills. I need to figure out how I can add value to the world so people are going to need me for something. Because I'm no longer needed as an athlete. That was my identity. I need to find another identity where people are going to need the thing that I have so that I can make money. And
like your real life business school.
That was it, man. That was it. I didn't make any money in those first couple of years until the end. I started to use LinkedIn to connect with people and build these LinkedIn events around the country. Then I started to make a couple grand a month hosting LinkedIn networking events where I was doing all the marketing on LinkedIn to get people to show up at these events, bringing people together at a time when they needed the most in 2008, 2009, when the economy was pretty bad. And from there, just continue to learn how to leverage those events. How can I monetize them more? How can I optimize it? How can I get a cut from the food and bar at these places? How can I sell sponsorship tables? How can I charge at the door? How can I write a book that I can then sell. I was just figuring out how could I monetize the experience. And that's what kind of kickstarted me in the business world, which was using LinkedIn and leveraging it to my maximum abilities. And it kind of has grown from there.
Do you remember the first time you got paid for doing a LinkedIn event or doing some LinkedIn coaching, whatever that was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first time someone paid me, it was actually like the mentor who was kind of helping me. One of the mentors at Toastmasters that I met, who was the author, I was using LinkedIn and he was just like, can you show me how to use this? So I went over to his place and like optimized his LinkedIn profile. He had a business already. And at the end of it, I was just doing it for free as like a favor because he did so much for me for free as a mentor. And at the end of it, he got out his checkbook and wrote me a $100 check. I was like, there's no way I can take this. He goes, trust me, I'm going to make a lot more money than you think from what you just did for me. I'm like, really? This is stuff I've been doing like on my sister's couch, 6 to 8 hours a day for the last year and a half now. And he was like, yes, this is going to transform my business. And so I started doing more of those. And I just called myself like the LinkedIn profile makeover guy. I was like, if you want to learn how to use LinkedIn, email me and we'll set up a one-on-one. And $100 turned into $200 a session and then $300 a session. And I just got a bunch of these one-on-one makeover consulting sessions. And I remember making $300 once from a call. Now I'm still broke, making, $1,000 a month maybe, living on my sister's couch. And I remember making $300 in a Skype call. And something like flipped the switch on me where I was just like, I don't want to do this one-on-one anymore. Like even if it's $500 or $1,000, like something, if it connected, I was like, I can only make a certain amount if I do 10 of these a day. And the energy it took from me to do it, I was just like, it's exhausting. It's kind of boring. I talk about this stuff all the time. It's so easy for me that I just don't even want to do it. that's when I started to learn, okay, how can I create something once and then sell it over and over again? Or create something once that is sold over and over again as a membership, right? So I just started to learn and grow as I had new goals of like, okay, I've made a couple grand a month. How do I turn it to 5,000 so I can afford my own apartment? Okay, I make 5,000 a month. How can I make 10,000? I just learned the next level of what I needed to do in business and continue to educate myself over the last decade. And it's been growing ever since.
So I want to fast forward a little bit because there's a lot that happened between, when you first started making money with LinkedIn consulting and where you are today, right? So you started the blog, lewishouse.com. You pushed out a ton of content. You have like hundreds upon hundreds of blog posts. You have a top 100 iTunes podcast, 500,000 Instagram followers, best-selling author of 2 books. The list goes on and on, right? So, you know, between when you first got started with the blog, let's say, and, you know, where you are today, roughly, are there any other particular moments that sort of stick out in your mind, or maybe even decisions you made that have really elevated your business in a big way?
I remember in 2009, I got an email from a writer at Details Magazine, which I guess Details Magazine is no longer around, but it was pretty big, well-known back then. Email saying, hey, I discovered you and I want to do an article about you. And I'm featuring Seth Godin, Gary Vaynerchuk, and Tim Ferriss in the article as well. And we want to include you. And all of a sudden I'm like, holy shnikes. You know, I'm like, wow. Okay. I'm like, sure, let's do it. And so he's asking me questions about, you know, LinkedIn business and all this other stuff that I was doing. And, he said, okay, cool. We're going to do a photo shoot in the middle of Times Square with all of you and do this like cover, you know, feature wow. spread. So I fly out to New York. It's me and Gary, Tim, and Seth Godin, Dan Chabelle, and another woman. Tim couldn't make it for whatever reason. So it's 5 of us in this shot and just happened to be, you know, taller than all of them. So they put me in the middle of this shot. Right. And I think the experience of like having kind of some mainstream press credibility started to elevate my brand and authority to another level, I would say. Even though I was like, there's no way I should be in this. Somehow I was able to position myself online with the perceived value that I had created much more than I had. Not that I was lying about anything, but just like the look, the feel. And when I went back and emailed the writer after the magazine came out, I said, you know, how did you find me, by the way? I was just curious. And he said, well, someone retweeted an article of yours about LinkedIn or something on Twitter. And I went to your bio, I clicked on your link, and I went to your website, and I saw that you were featured in all these other media outlets already. So I figured if you were good enough for them, you were good enough for this story. And so that kind of reminded me the power of press and social proof and like having credibility behind you, your work, your business, your name. And so I just started saying, I need to get on as much TV and magazines and everything as possible. And even though that doesn't really drive sales necessarily, now that I've been on Ellen twice and Good Morning America and Today Show and all these things, it doesn't really drive sales for the business, but it has helped elevate the brand to separate myself, which in turn helps with sales.
Yeah, I like that. It's kind of like, you know, just building long-term equity versus looking at, you know, how am I going to earn $1,000 from this appearance or this article? Yeah. That's the focus. So exactly. I want to shift gears a little bit again on you here. You know, we mentioned books a little while ago. So I want to dive into your most recent one, The Mask of Masculinity, which I felt, you know, personally was really about sort of like how to tear down your own walls, how to be vulnerable, and all of the different benefits that you'll experience across your life by doing that. So what led you to needing to get this book out of your head and onto paper?
About 4.5 years ago, I started going through my own journey of breaking down walls. I think for many years I lived with a big ego, and I'm sure today, you know, I still have a big ego, I'm sure, but I'm so much more aware of my intentions and my, you know, my focus on being as living in as much humility as possible to live of service, to give to people, as opposed to thinking, I want everything for myself, which was a lot of my mentality in my teens and 20s, which was, how can I be the best in the world? How can I be number one? How can I get the most recognition? And that mentality actually worked. It got me a lot of results, recognition, all these things that I wanted. By focusing on it, it happened. But I was never fulfilled inside. I was almost angrier every time I achieved something that I had a big dream about. And I remember just wondering, why am I never like happy inside? Why am I always feeling isolated and alone in my heart? And why is it hard for me to sleep at night? And why is it, you know, why am I angry about things? Why do I get so defensive when people, when I feel like people are attacking me? Why can't I just let things go? But I could never let things go. And I started down this journey of first off being aware, okay, this is what I've been doing for a while. And in some ways it works. It gets me big results financially, you know, all these things. But my inner world is suffering. So I started to go through different workshops and trainings and meet with therapists and just try to assess everything about my life and see how could I get to the next level in my inner world. Meditation, retreats, everything. And one of the workshops really opened me up to seeing how big my ego actually was, how angry I actually was, which was confusing because I always felt like I was a happy, joyful person that cared deeply for people. But I think there was this angry undertone or passive-aggressive undertone. So one of these workshops got me to open up and share about a lot of things I've been through in my past that I never share with anyone, about sexual abuse that I went through when I was a kid, about just a lot of the insecurities that I faced, a lot of the, you know, never felt like I was good enough, never felt like I was smart enough. Things that I think a lot of kids face in general, these things of insecurities. But I, you know, the sexual abuse was a big one. And I opened up in this workshop for the first time because we got to a place in the workshop where they're like, if there's anything that you need to say that you haven't said yet after like a few days of this workshop that you feel might be holding you back from having everything you want in your life, now's the time to talk about those things. And at this point, we had talked about a lot of the struggles we'd been through already. But I was like, why am I still unable to talk about this? What's my fear behind it? What am I afraid of? And so I got up and started sharing in front of this group of about 50 people. And when I was done sharing, the emotions, I just erupted with tears and I couldn't hold back the feelings, the emotions and the shame, the guilt, the everything, the fear. But the more, you know, it was a beautiful experience because so many people came up to me afterwards and men shared with me things that they'd been through that they'd never told anyone. And so I started to learn more about the power of just being your authentic self, as kind of cheesy as that sounds. But sharing things that you think actually you're the most terrified of are the things that are going to bring you the most power when you share them with the right context and setting and things like that. And I started sharing it with all my family, my friends, and I started opening up publicly about it. After about 6 to 9 months, I started sharing more publicly about it because I felt like I was feeling this sense of freedom that I never had in my heart for the first time. And the sense of peace and the sense of calm and the sense of love that I never faced before. And I realized so many men were suffering in the world who were unable to express their emotions, who were unable to share their vulnerabilities, who didn't even have one guy friend they could talk to about things that were hurting them. So I felt at that point it was a responsibility to talk about it publicly because I'd never really seen another tall, white, straight, male, jock guy talking about these things. I didn't see an example of it. I saw Oprah and Brene Brown and Deepak, but guys who looked like me, there was no example that I knew. So I said, I'm just going to do it myself, I guess, and see what happens. And that podcast where I talked about the sexual abuse was one of the most downloaded things I've ever done. And more than that, one of the biggest responses from hundreds of emails of men opening up to me about what they'd been through and how they never told anyone. And now they're going to tell people and freedom it was giving them. So I felt like after the School of Greatness came out, I had already been writing the School of Greatness and was working on that. And after that, you know, my agents and publishers were like, okay, let's do like a business book or this and that. And I was just like, I feel like this is the book that needs to happen right now for me. Whether people read it or not, whether it does well or not, I feel like this needs to be out there that's available for people to read it whenever. And so it probably wasn't like a smart business move, but it was more of like, this is a mission. And I felt a duty and a responsibility to other men out there who might be suffering, or women, because 50% of the people reading it are women who have a challenging relationships with their father, with their husband, with their brother, with their sons, who maybe feel disconnected, and how to understand the men in their life better. So that's why I wrote it, and it's been a powerful last few months.
Yeah, that takes a lot of courage. And I want to be respectful of your time. So for everyone listening, we're going to have that linked up in the show notes. It is a great book that everyone should read, men and women both. But Lewis, I've got a couple super quick rapid fire questions for you here. So what would you say is your number one piece of advice for someone who wants to start working on a side hustle today?
I would say launch it first, generate sales, then create it. See if something's actually going to, someone's got to buy something first before you actually have it. If they don't buy it, then don't spend 6 months of your life trying to build the perfect thing with the perfect logo and the website. Sell something first, then deliver it to them later. Kickstarter, perfect example.
Have you ever done this the wrong way yourself? Have you learned this one the hard way?
I did spend, I built out this bigger program and I was like, you know what? Everything else I'd done was kind of like sell it with the minimum viable product and design and just like put it out there with like a link to buy, no sales page, no like design. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this like professionally. I'm going to like be ahead. I'm going to do all the content ahead of time. I'm going to do all the design. I'm going to think about it perfectly. And I probably spent 6 months designing this thing. And it didn't do as well as just like launching something and getting feedback and getting results and seeing what people wanted. And it still did well, but I was like, man, it was kind of a waste of 6 months trying to create the perfect videos and everything perfect. And yeah, so I think there's still a balance. I mean, if you're Nike, you don't want to put out like half-built shoes or whatever and be like, okay, we'll get you the rest later. But I like, you know, how Tesla does it. It's like, all right, here's the concept for the car. It's 2 years out. Buy it now to get on a wait list. If no one buys it, they probably don't make that thing, you know? So it's like sharing the idea of what's going to happen or the idea of the information they're going to get or the service or the product, and then sell that idea first. And if people buy it, then go build it.
I love that. Awesome examples too. For our listeners here today that want to build a personal brand like you've done for yourself, those of us that can't necessarily engineer getting in a magazine shoot with Gary Vaynerchuk and Tim Ferriss, let's say.
That was all luck, though, yeah.
What would be your advice to someone who wants to get to a similar position that you're in today?
I mean, find the platform that you love where the audience is the most for you. I mean, right now it's Instagram, right? Everyone's on Instagram. Maybe it's YouTube for you if you're doing YouTube videos or whatever it may be, but find the platform that you're going to want to be a part of for the next few years and that you think is going to continue to grow and be an innovator in there. So my girlfriend is the largest female doctor of physical therapy on Instagram. She's the largest following for physical therapists. She's the second largest of all people, largest female. There's a guy who's got 450,000 or something. She has innovated in that space where most of them have like 1,000 because no one knows what they're doing. She has innovated in the last year, 250,000 organic followers by just doing one educational video every single day that is unique and specific, that differentiates herself from everyone else. That has built her brand and has built a multi six-figure business without her really even knowing what she's doing on business. But because she creates so much value with her content, people want to watch it, they want to share it, and they want to follow her. So find a way to be unique on one of these platforms and add so much value with your content, where it's very intentional, the content you're delivering, so you can differentiate yourself. When you differentiate yourself, you stand alone, and that brand is powerful when it stands alone.
Yeah. And keep showing up, right? Like the consistency is key.
Yeah. Every single day. You know, my podcast is 3 times a week for the last 3 years. I've done it every week for the last 5 years. And that's a differentiator. You know, it's the quality of content and the consistency. You know, some people try to overcomplicate it, but it may take a while to get going, but you've got to continue to innovate the content and just be consistent with it.
All right. Well, Lewis, this is my last question for you. What's been the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your business? So this could be in the form of time, money, education, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
Best investment is in health. You know, Steve Jobs talks about how he wishes at the end of his life that he kind of wasted things away. And even though he built one of the biggest businesses in the world, he's not around to enjoy it anymore. And I would put anything on it that he would give up all of his money to have another week, month, year of his life back. But unfortunately, there are things that we're out of our control that might happen to us, but there are also things we can prevent. And I think our mental, emotional, and physical health are the most important things to invest in, whether that's the food you're eating, the nutritionist coach, the fitness coach, being able to be around and have the energy to show up in your business. It's going to give you more confidence. It's going to give you more passion. It's going to give you more energy. It's going to separate you from the other people in the industry. And you're going to enroll more people in your vision when you have a healthy lifestyle. People are inspired by those who have a healthy lifestyle. It shows they have discipline. Just walking into a room, you already know by the way someone physically is or their energy, how they show up, that they have discipline because they're able to be consistent with something, nutrition and fitness and emotional well-being. You know, when you read things about Zuckerberg, I mean, you read things about Mark Cuban, about Richard Branson. Richard Branson has a quote, I think, where he says, "The key to my business has been fitness." And I think the emotional fitness, physical fitness are keys to be able to simply just last a long time. And, you know, business takes some time to build. It takes a while. But if you don't have the energy, you're going to get exhausted and you're going to get broken down when challenges come your way. So invest in health above all.
I love that. Well, Lewis, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you and everything you're up to?
Yeah, just at Lewis Howes on social media, School of Greatness podcast. Check it out.
Beautiful. All right. Well, Lewis, thank you again for joining us.
Appreciate you, brother.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.